Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our guest is David Rosnick. David is an economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He has a Ph.D. in computer science, a master's in economics, and he recently co-authored a report on the wealth of the baby boomer generation. David, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
I read a number of years ago that the baby boom generation was going to be the recipient of countless trillions of dollars and be in very strong financial shape. How is that looking at this point?
The baby boomers, of course, have been, you know, have a fair amount of wealth. It's something that always, every generation has typically had more wealth than the previous generation, so it's not a big surprise. Unfortunately, the baby boomers have been hit by a couple of pretty big shocks recently. Between the stock market bubble, in 2000, and the collapse of the housing bubble here, and the return of a stock collapse this year, the wealth situation of the baby boomers is not looking terribly well.
In the new 2009 report, you say the retirement prospects of baby boomers look much bleaker than they did 8 months ago. 8 months ago is a very short time period to wipe out savings of a lifetime. So, how are they coping with this? I mean, I understand the dollars and cents, but how are they mentally coping with this occurrence?
Well, I'm not sure how they're mentally coping with it, but I wouldn't say that the change was all that sudden. The housing bubble has been deflating for a couple of years now. Households seem to have been quite aware that their financial situation has been deteriorating. The savings rate's been on the rise, possibly since the middle of 2007, though for technical reasons, the trend didn't show up for another year. Without a doubt, households have begun increasing their savings by last summer. It's perfectly rational behavior on part of the individual households, but the collective drop in consumption has resulted in a wave of layoffs, which has triggered a downward spiral in the economy that is yet to show signs of stopping. People need jobs that provide good income so they can both consume and save. So one way in which ordinary Americans are coping with the change is to recognize the problem and not stand in the way of stimulus spending on the part of the government. I also like to see the government subsidize shorter work hours for those who do have jobs, a shorter work week, paid sick, or vacation time.
Okay. Would it be fair to say that the wealthy of the baby boom generation would be more affected by a stock market decline and the poorer would be affected by the real estate decline?
That's a surprisingly non-trivial question. The wealthiest baby boomers own much more stock equity than the less so, but they're also much more likely to be homeowners. In wealth terms, the bottom fifth of households maybe get completely wiped out, with only foreclosure as a way of staying afloat. And these projections are based on 2004 homeownership. We don't even consider the highly leveraged purchases made between 2004 and 2007. The 2007 wealth numbers were released just as we were finishing this project.
Okay. Now, you said with only foreclosure as a way to keep them afloat. I'm not sure I understand that.
Well, a lot of these homeowners are underwater.
Right.
Mortgages. And so if they have a lot of net debt and that's essentially forgiven with the foreclosure, then they're likely to have positive net wealth again.
Okay. Are we talking about forgiven due to bankruptcy or foreclosure? Just want to clarify.
Either way, but I'm thinking because we're talking about
the real estate loans
at this point, that's the main driver.
Okay. How do you feel about some of the solutions that they've come up recently? Let's say the cram down, where the attorneys or the judges in a bankruptcy can change the loan amounts.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with that. I'd be happier to not be so concerned about keeping these households' actual homeowners. I'd like to be able to see them kept in their homes. It would be nice if, you know, the home went back to the bank and they were paying market value rent for the homes.
Now, okay, I read a report that that I think you wrote about that. What's your idea if a lender forecloses on somebody? Are they? Do you feel that they should rent to that same person, and for how long?
Well, I think that there's something that works out best for both parties. I mean, the bank doesn't want to take over a home and try and sell it in this market, just adding to the downward spiral of prices. Now, prices have to come down, but if the bank doesn't want to sell in this kind of market, and just from their perspective, they're just adding to the problem. But by keeping them in a home, and it's not like the homeowner, can't actually pay what the home is worth, in terms of rent. And so I think it's to both parties' advantage to actually work out a situation like that.
Okay. In California, that the amount that they're owed and the amount of rent might be very different, as you can imagine.
So, oh, absolutely. This is something that we've been talking about as the price of homes were going up in the first place. It didn't seem to make a lot of sense for people to be buying into the market at all because prices were so high relative to rent. But, the home prices are coming down, and the bank's going to take a loss one way or another. If they foreclose, they're going to they're going to have to eat some of that anyway. So,
do you favor
out where they can get something out of it?
Do you favor a requirement for them to do that, or is that just something that they should consider along with other options?
I think the problem with not making it a requirement to some degree is that, you're kind of leaving it up to the banks, and they really have kind of all the power at this point. And so I would favor, some sort of, I would favor making it more mandatory than optional.
Okay. What do you think the effect on that, on future lending would be if that was the case?
Future lending for home lendings, or
yeah, home
lending overall in the economy.
Yeah, lending on homes. I mean, if we're able to enforce something like that, I wonder how many dollars will be available in the future for home loans.
Well, no, I right now I'm not surprised that there's little money available for home loans because prices are continuing to fall. I think that I think there's always going to be solid lending prospects out there, and I don't think that banks are really going to suffer from that.
Okay. Do you view any policy different? Everyone's working on loss mitigation, trying to keep the current owners in place. What if we had, in California, a very popular loan was an option arm or an Alt-A, and a lot of times the people were able to state their income. Let's say somebody misstated their income. Do you feel that they should be held responsible for that at all?
Well, I don't know how prevalent that was compared to the actual lenders misstating incomes, from what I understand. I think that's a pretty serious problem. There's also a question of skepticism. During the run-up in prices, it really didn't matter what a person's income was. Even if they couldn't afford the home, the assumption that home prices were going to continue to go up, 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 what's the worst that could happen is that they stop making payments and the bank took over the home and it would be worth more than the mortgage and they'd sell it at a profit. It was not a big deal. Or optionally, the homeowner could just decide to sell at one point if they decide they couldn't afford to make the payments on the rent, they make the profit. So I think there was a general lack of skepticism, as prices were going up, but the whole problem fundamentally was that there was this unsustainable home price bubble that people refused to acknowledge.
Now, you created something that of a calculator it's called a housing cost calculator, comparing cost of owning a home relative to renting the same property.
Mm-hmm.
Is it very typical that the price to own a home monthly is much, much more than renting, or is it in some percentage range that's more normal?
Currently, or
Just historically, I'm sure that's what it was designed to do, is see when something got out of whack.
Right. Historically, it hasn't been that different. But once prices got out of line, then the risk of a downside meant that the homeowners were almost guaranteed to lose money on homes by buying rather than renting. I mean, I think that was just, I mean, basic calculations seem to show that.
Okay. Now, the baby boom generation has been around for a while, and there was an assumption that they were the benefactor of the stock boom that we had. We've had several house booms, and yet their current financial situation really is kind of scary. So what happened, maybe the bigger question is, do bubbles benefit the long-term wealth of people?
Oh, I'd have to say there's no reason why that would be the case. I mean, what possible advantage could there be to having prices going up, up, up in an unsustainable manner? I mean, as prices are coming down, it just means that that people who are purchasing today are able to get a better deal on getting their share of their claims to future wealth.
When prices were going up, we were refinancing many hundreds of millions or billions of dollars out of the homes and spending it. So at least there must have been a short term pleasant streak because of bubbles. Yes?
Well, sure. As people have, they saw on paper that their wealth was going up, and they are anticipating that their future wealth was going to be even higher than that because their home prices were going up and their stocks were doing well. Of course, they felt free to spend. And, I mean, the savings rate was very low for a number of years, and we're just seeing that people are realizing that actually they're not as wealthy as they thought, and they need to start saving.
Do you think there should be some acceptance of risk when you do any kind of investment?
Well, sure there should, but I think that the baby boomers in particular have gotten a lot of really bad advice from experts that really should have known better. I mean, when you're seeing day in and day out that people are saying that, oh, this isn't a bubble, that prices are always going up and up. You know, we've seen that basically, we've been hearing this nonstop for, for more than a decade now, with between stocks and home prices. You know, it's just really bad advice. People think that they're told that this is the way out. This is how you increase your wealth. And, you know, without competing voices, I don't really blame people for accepting the advice that they get.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they accept that advice and it doesn't turn out well, is that the risk they took, or should there be somebody, some backstop behind them saying, here, we will make this collectively better?
Well, they do have a backstop behind that. We've got, personal savings is only one leg of what we normally consider, the foundation of people's retirement.
Okay.
In addition to personal savings, there's Social Security, and there's defined benefit private pensions. And fortunately, Social Security is secure for a good long time, and defined benefit programs, although they're not as prevalent as they once was, something like, I believe, 1 in 3 baby boomer families have some form of defined benefit pension.
Now, is that a let's just explain a defined benefit plan as opposed to a defined contribution plan, you don't mind.
Okay, and a defined contribution plan is like a 401k, where you put a certain amount of money into an account and it goes into stocks or bonds or what have you, and whatever the result of the market is when you decide it's time to retire, then that's the money that you have. With a defined contribution, with a defined benefit plan, that you basically forego some of your earnings as you're making them, and your employer, whoever manages the pension, essentially guarantees that you will get a certain regular income at the time that you retire.
Okay. Now, that guarantee is probably as good as their decisions on what they invested it in. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, but they're supposed to be looking out for the longer period of time, and unfortunately, private pensions have actually suffered a great deal because of the bubble market. As stock prices gone up, a lot of pension managers have actually believed, or at least claimed they believed, that they were in really great financial shape because they saw that they had all this wealth behind their plans. And as prices have come back down, they realize they've been undercapitalized, and so they're struggling. But again, that's an argument against continued bubble economies. These things, this is kind of, you know, we say in economics that frequently it's about prices, and that gives you the information that you need in order to plan and how to save and how to consume. And when things get completely out of line like that, over the short term, that means that people are making bad planning decisions. And that's just a big example where it becomes very costly.
Do you see the defined benefit plans of, let's say, cities like Vallejo, who have just declared bankruptcy? Do you see that those dollars that the people believed they were going to get, do you think they in fact will?
I think of the whole financial situation in California right now. I don't know who's getting much of anything. I can't speak specifically to anybody in particular.
Well, just in general, I know the city of Vallejo happened to declare bankruptcy, but I guess it's sort of filled with defined benefit issues, and so are probably many other cities and entities. So, just in general, defined benefit plans usually have a projection of a certain rate of earnings on their money that might, certainly in the last 2 years would have been completely untrue. As a matter of fact, probably they've all lost money. So they're probably not in nearly as good a financial shape as they need to be at this point to keep their promises. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that's almost certainly true. I think that this part and parcel of the failure to actually recognize that we are experiencing bubble economies. I mean, if people were really aware that the situation was unsustainable, then they'd be expected to actually prepare for that. If you had a man like Alan Greenspan going around and actually saying, this is completely ridiculous, I can't believe, what's going on around here, then people would be held responsible today for what they were doing. The fact that that a man like Alan Greenspan can go around and deny that there was anything funky going on in the economy, it gave free rein to this kind of thing.
Okay. Are you afraid of the situation for the seniors when they retire? What type of shape will, say, the lower 25 or 30% of them be in financially?
Today's seniors or...
Well, the baby boom generation. And what age does that now encompass?
Well, when we talk about the baby boomers, we're talking about the 45 to 64 crowd. And so we kind of divide that up into the 45 to 54 as being the younger baby boomers and the 55 to 64 being the older boomers. So the older boomers are really approaching retirement. And there's, their situation, I won't say it's completely... stuck at where it is. They've got a couple years, and lots of things can happen. But with the younger crowd, at least, the youngest baby boomers have, as much as 15 years to, 15, 16 years in order to get themselves back on track. But largely, the baby boomers are not looking like they're in great shape at this point. The lowest fifth of households, I mean, they could be completely wiped out by the loss of housing and stock wealth.
Okay. There probably had been some thought that we might have some people, maybe a lot of people in the baby boom generation that didn't need Social Security, and it looks like we're going to have some people where that is a very big piece of their retirement. That, to me, is a little scary.
I think Social Security was always an important part of people's retirement, and I don't think that really ever changed. That doesn't frighten me. I think it just points to the importance of Social Security in terms of providing a secure retirement for retirees.
We have a very big generation that's going to retire less well than they thought, probably. And they're going to be supported by a fewer in number group of people. You thought the long-term prospects of Social Security were just fine. So that must be some calculation that you've done. So we shouldn't be worried about the stability of that program?
Social Security, if you want to look at it over, you know, maybe 40 years down the road, what we're talking about after the baby boomers are sadly passed on, you know, then there could be possibly, there might be, you know, something that we have to worry about to shore up the program. But that's something that can happen, you know, far down the road. It's nothing urgent.
Okay.
What we do have to worry about today is that healthcare costs are completely out of control and getting worse and worse. We have a broken healthcare system that's dragging down Medicare and Medicaid along with it. If we fix healthcare generally, Medicare and Medicaid will be in fine shape.
And how would you propose we do that?
Well, there's a number of approaches that we can take, but our system is so completely ridiculous at this point. We spend, you know, something like twice as much per person on healthcare than any other industrialized country, and our outcomes are just not as good.
So you think a program of I don't know. Is it, what is the word? Socialized medicine? Is that the way that we're probably headed?
Well, I would think that wouldn't necessarily. I don't know if that's necessarily where we're headed. I'd like to see us head down some direction like that, given that it's worked in other countries. I mean, we have, in a sense, the best healthcare in the world, but the worst delivery system. I mean, that's just inexcusable. I don't believe that the rest of the world knows something that we don't, and that they can provide better health care for their populations at half the cost, but we cannot.
Okay. Getting one other question, and we're almost out of time. The one thing that really stood out to me when I read the report was that you said that the net worth of the baby boomers that owned a home was less than the people that had rented, and I'm sure that's a median or some, you can tell me what that was, but just that statement was quite surprising because I really thought many of the seniors or the baby boom generation had most of their wealth in their home. That has radically changed in the last 24 months, apparently.
I'm sorry, can you, I missed something in there, I'm afraid. Can you?
Okay, your report said that the people that owned a home had less of a net worth than renters.
In 2009?
Well, yes.
Our projections, yes.
Okay. Absolutely. Is that unusual? I mean, that's got to be unusual.
If you break down by income quintile, you would think, let's say in 2004, that homeowners were a little bit more wealthy than non-homeowners. I mean, generally, that would be the case. You'd expect homeowners to be, you know, to be wealthier than non-homeowners.
Yeah, because it's hard to have equity when you're a renter.
Well, right, but I mean, your wealth doesn't have to be tied up in your home. You could have it in equities. You know, you could have it in bonds. There are other forms of wealth that you can have. It doesn't have to be tied up in your home. But the fact is, the home is a highly leveraged asset. And the fact is that if your wealth is coming through a highly leveraged asset and the price comes down, then you're going to be hit much harder than that. So what we're seeing is that if you control by wealth, that the people who have their wealth in homes as opposed to stocks, that when home prices come down, they find themselves afterwards in much worse shape than the people who were renting.
Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense. Well, David, we're about out of time. Thank you very much for an excellent report. The report is called The Wealth of the Baby Boom Cohorts After the Collapse of the Housing Bubble. David Drosnick, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, we'll talk to you again.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.